Welcome to the Hypnosis NGH Podcast. I'm Eric Damon from the National Guild of Hypnotists. This podcast series offers a fun and serious look at hypnosis and offers various ideas, discuss case studies, along with NGH educational opportunities.
I was going to tell you about how his father, Milton, made him into a therapist. And then, if we're lucky, maybe he'll tell us the story of the bicycle lady.
Now, let me address another story, because this is the one which I played a role of a therapist in a sense. I was probably 6 years old. My father called me into his office, and there was a patient already in the office, and the patient was standing beside the chair. He wasn't seated, and he was standing, and he was bent at the hip. So it was his back formed a right angle, and he was holding a cane. And so understand, I'm 6 years old, so the way I'm standing and the way he's standing, my eye is like eye contact with him. And I'll call him Mr. Kane, C-A-N-E, because he walked with a cane. And my father introduced me, and this is Mr. Kane. And he said, now, I want you to do us a favor. I want you to take Mr. Kane for a walk. I want you to go out to the front of the house, walk out on the sidewalk. And at the front of the house, I want you to walk to Central Avenue. Now, we're the fourth house off the street. And so, okay. Walk to the corner and then turn around and walk back. But as you walk down the sidewalk and you come to a tree or a branch that's above your head, Robert, actually I was called Bobby then, as you come to a branch or a tree, I want you to reach up towards it. Now, you can't reach it because it's much higher than you, but you can reach it as if you could reach up towards it. And Mr. Kane should imitate you. And okay. And so we walk down the sidewalk, and sure enough, the first tree I come to, I reach up towards it, and I watch Mr. Kane as he reaches up. And of course, he's just barely moving his arm upward. And we walk on, and the next bush or tree, and I reach up for it. Remember, I'm 6 years old, and he imitates me. And okay, so I did that one day. And again, I don't know the frequency with which Mr. Kane saw my father, but every time he came to see my father, that was my job. Take Mr. Kane for another walk. Now, I could see, I'm only 6 years old, but I could see after a while that Mr. Kane was reaching up more so. That his back was beginning to bend more upright. Wow. And again, I was 6 years old, and I don't remember how long this went on, but I mean, it went on for a prolonged period of time, and I enjoyed it. My father gave me permission to not just walk down to Third Avenue, but to walk over to the next block and then turn around and walk back. Eventually, we even were able to go around the entire block. And I mean, this was wonderful for me. I was walking down here and I would stop and I'd reach up. Nobody told me that was too fast or too quick or too slow, or I shouldn't have done it there. I should have done it in the next tree or something, because here I was, a six-year-old, and I was telling Mr. Kane, now let's do it again. And then we'd walk two or three steps and I would stop and I would reach up and he would reach up again. And I'd step two more steps, and I'd reach up, and he'd reach up.
But, Robert, you're leaving out the best part.
What?
Tell me about how therapeutic this was for Mr. Kane.
Well, it worked for Mr. Kane because, again, I was 6 years old, and I, you know, have a memory of so many of those instances, but then I can remember, and I don't remember the exact transition. It's just that I remember at another time, walking into my father's office, and Mr. Kane was standing literally upright, and talking with my father, and I don't remember them saying it as such, but it was obvious that I wasn't needed to help him anymore because he had accomplished what he was supposed to have accomplished. I'll give you another story about patients and our relationship with them. From time to time, my parents or my father would be, he'd go out of town, out of state for a convention, and there would be some occasions that my mother would go with him. And so they, my parents, would leave the house. And of course, there would always be an adult staying at the house, either family or friend who would supervise his children, etc. But we children had certain responsibilities when our parents were gone. And before my parents would leave, they would go over what the responsibilities were, what tasks I had, what tasks my brothers and sisters would have, and so forth. And one of the things that my father would tell us was about the bicycle lady. Now, the bicycle lady, that was simply the way we had to identify her, just like you're the white guy in the pickup truck or something. And the bicycle lady would come to see my father and ride on a bicycle there and would leave on the bicycle and so forth. Now, my father gave us the directions which were, if the bicycle lady shows up, she will want to go into my office. That's okay. She'll go into the office and she'll shut the door and then she'll leave after a while. And as with other patients, don't engage her in conversation. Don't ask why or anything. Okay. Sure enough, my parents left on, say, Friday, and on Monday, here's the bicycle lady knocking on the door. And, oh, all right. And goes into the office, shuts the door. And I can't tell you when she left. Maybe 10 or 12 minutes later, she would leave and get back on her bicycle, and she's gone. A week passes. My parents come back from their trip. And I remember on one occasion, my brother Alan. He had made very, what shall I say, precise notes. And as we are being debriefed about when my parents were gone, my brother would want to explain that, okay, she showed up on Tuesday and she arrived at 1 o'clock and she stayed until 1:18. And then, but my father wasn't interested in that. He wanted to know, Robert, did you weed the rose garden? Alan, did you mow the backyard? Did so and so wash the car? Or something like that. He didn't care as to how many times the bicycle lady came there or how long she stayed. It didn't matter. Okay, so that's that. Now, I learned about the bicycle lady maybe 20 years later. I mean, she, like other patients, I don't remember when she stopped seeing my father. She just was sort of like other patients that I remember seeing her this month and a year later, I said, gee, I haven't seen her since then, or something like that. So I have no idea when she stopped seeing my father. It's just that about 20 years later, I read about her. My mother had encouraged me to read it because my father had written it. And I read it, and there were just enough loose ends about it that I was able to figure out. He's writing about the bicycle lady. There were just enough little details that that is her. Okay. What I learned was, I learned what her problem was. Her problem was that she was being, as she said, followed by a bunch of naked men.
Oh,
And
wow.
these naked men, you can probably see them because they were floating in the air. I think they were green in color, and they were floating about shoulder height to her. And according to this article, my father, in treating the bicycle lady, he induced her to have the naked men enter into the closet of his office and shut the door. And because they were in the closet, she could go about her normal activities. Now, when he was out of town, the reason he wanted her to be able to come to the office was so that she could enter the office, shut the door, and then check to make certain that they were still in the closet. And they were still in the closet. So she
Wow.
could leave the office, get back on her bicycle, and go on her way. You know, as I read that article, I was thinking to myself, my gosh, those naked men are probably still in that closet.
Now, David, we don't have as much tight time as he's got stories, but why don't you ask him about the little boy who fell down and knocked his noggin pretty hard?
Yes, when I was 7 years of age, I was in a very serious auto pedestrian accident. I struck by a truck. I had two broken legs, a concussion, partial paralysis temporarily on the right side of my body. Okay, I was in the hospital for I don't know how long. I was in traction for both legs being broken and so forth. And, of course, I was visited regularly, frequently by my mother. And what I would notice, now remember, I'm 7 years old, I'm in traction, I'm in the hospital like other patients just like me. And I remember mentioning to my mother on one occasion of how you come to visit me regularly, but my father doesn't, or dad doesn't. And I don't remember exactly how my mother explained that, you know, he may not be here, but he is in spirit. Mm-hmm. But what she pointed out to me was that this was in an open ward. In other words, it's not a private room. And so there's beds left of me, right of me, and you know, in front of me, and et cetera. And I could see other patients. And what my mother pointed out to me was that here's a boy in another bed not far from mine who had a broken whatever it was, an arm or leg. And his parents were both there visiting him, and they were both crying and both weeping, and he was crying. And my mother pointed out to me that what is being accomplished by that? I mean, both parents are showing up, and all three of them, the patient and the parents, are all being upset and crying and so forth. And my mother taught me of how, you know, you don't want that to be duplicated. There's no reason for that to really happen. I'm here, and I'm telling you what your brothers and sisters, what the goodwill that they want to send to you, and I'm going to extend it to you from your father as well. And so, you know, there's no need for your father to be here. Now, I later learned that my father actually would visit me, but he would visit me from afar. And by that, I mean, I learned that he would show up in the ward, and he would go to like a nurse's station where he could view me, and he could ask nurses questions or something like that about my condition or improvement or something like that. But he never visited me per se so that I could see him or touch him. And you know, it made sense to me then, and it made even further sense to me later. Yeah.
Well, there's also the story that's actually written in one of the books that you read to me about the little boy who fell down and knocked his head.
Okay. The other story that I can share with you in particular was that I can't remember exactly how I fell, but I fell in such a way that I cut my lip very badly. And, yes, I do remember. I was walking down the back steps from the kitchen door and tripped on the steps and fell down and cut my lip very badly. Now, I'm about 5 years old at the time. And, you know, I'm 5 years old and I'm bleeding profusely and I'm screaming like a five-year-old would. And I can remember my parents came to the porch and picked me up and took me into the kitchen. I had gone out the kitchen back door and set me beside the sink. And now I'm screaming and crying as a five-year-old would. And my parents sat me down by the sink and they sort of like cupped my their hand or my hand beneath my chin to capture the blood. And my father began telling me about how that's blood, that's good red blood cells that are strong red blood cells. And we're sitting right beside, I'm seated right beside the sink. He turns on the faucet and he says, "Now watch." And he puts his hand under the faucet and he says, "Now see how this red blood turns pink in the water, and watch it and see how it goes down the drain. And here's some more blood, and see how you see the water thins it out and it turns pink and it goes down the drain. And see, now do this again, and oh, now the blood, it's that's not bleeding as much, so the bleeding has stopped." And now what this is doing to me psychologically is the pain is, in its normal sense, is diminishing.
Yeah, distraction, yeah.
Yes, and it's further being diminished because I'm being distracted. And neither my parents are gushing over saying, "Oh, what a terrible thing. Oh, how terrible, how awful, how bad." They're not doing that. My mother's not saying anything, and my father is pointing out something to me that I had never noticed before. And okay, now that the bleeding has stopped altogether, and they're dabbing away at it with a washcloth to see that's okay, and we're rinsing out the washcloth and washing more of this pink blood down the drain. And my father explained to me that now your mother's going to take you to the hospital because that's a large cut, and you're going to have stitches in it. And when you're going to have these stitches, Bobby, I want you to count the stitches, because Alan, your older brother, when he fell off a bicycle and he cut his arm, he had X number of stitches. I can't remember the number. And then when Betty Alice fell on a glass bottle and she cut her hand, and she had to have so many stitches. And when you come back, you can compare to see whether or not you had more stitches than Alan, or more than Betty Alice, or fewer stitches, and so on and so forth. And I can remember, actually, when I returned home, boasting, coming in there and explaining that I had X number of stitches. I forget how many it was. It was a very long cut, and because it was in the lip, it had to be very small stitches. So it was a large number, like 17 stitches, because it was such a small area and they had to make the stitches so close together. But I mean, that became sort of like a badge.
Yeah.
Me to be able to boast that I'm better than off than you, Alan, or Betty Alec. I have more stitches than you did.
So it gave you the so during the process you're focused on the red blood turning the pink and the swirl. So you're focused on he's giving you the suggestions to stop bleeding. So he's focusing and you're stopping bleeding, and then he's giving you the suggestions for how you'll dude with the stitches, where you have the most stitches and you're better than your brother Alan. So that's amazing.
Yeah, and the idea of going to the hospital for the stitches was not something to fear, but rather almost to look forward to that. Okay, now I've done this. All right, let's go to the next step. So,
Yeah.
I mean, you said you're going to take me to the emergency room. Well, let's go. It's almost like
Eagerness.
an eagerness, because I had a problem and the solution is at the emergency room, so let's go.
I was very lucky that my one class that I was required to take, world literature, I met this wonderful man named Robert Barrickson, and the wonderful experiences we've experienced over these past 54 years together. And we're still going strong, so that's
But
wonderful.
tell them about your
Okay.
relationship with my father and my mother.
Okay. Dr. Erickson helped me pass my master's degree. That was his main emphasis, and I had no idea what hypnosis was or say, when are you going to get me ready? As I would study for the 6 months, 8 months, you know, in preparation for physical education for 2 hours and 2 hours in regular education. And so I always hesitated when I would write. Well, I asked for more paper because I kept writing. So apparently whatever he had with his special therapy was able to convince me that, you know, you're okay, you can pass this, these two parts of the test. They were very, very supportive of me through the years, and I value that friendship so much, you know, with them. And what else?
Let me give you a different perspective of Kathy studying for her master's exam. She was going to study for her master's exam, which she had to take. And I said to her, you know, Kathy, before you take the exam, go see my father and he will help you. And she would go off to, now we only live a half a mile away from the house, so, you know, just going there was just a few minutes drive. And she'd come home and I'd say, well, you were at my parents' house for an hour. What'd you talk about? And she would say, well, I can't remember. He said such and such, but I don't remember. And okay, so she's making visits there and I'm not learning anything about what she's doing. And one day she was unusually long, so I dropped by the house and I asked my mother, I entered in the kitchen and said, where's Kathy? Oh, she's in the front room with your father and with Dr. Ernie Rossi. And Kathy's there, and she said, yes. Okay, so I go in there and my wife, is literally lying on the floor. I show up and I stick my head into the front room, and my father's in one chair, Ernie Ross is in another chair, and they're chatting away, and I look and Kathy's lying on the floor on her back, and I say to my father, is she ready to come home now? And he simply said, no, I'll send her when she's ready. And so I go home, and then sometime later Kathy comes home and I say, well, you know, what did you learn today or what happened or something? And again, Kathy said, well, you know, I came into the room and he started talking and I don't remember what we talked about. And then I said, well, what about Ernie Rossi? And she said something to the effect that she didn't even know he was there. No. Okay, now, some time passes. Kathy takes the exam. She goes off to the university with many other students, and she takes the exam, and, you know, she files it, etc. Okay, now, several weeks lapse, and she receives a letter from the university, which is standard operating procedure, and she's opening up the letter, and she says to me, Robert, this is from the Department of Education, and they said that I have passed the exam, so I have my master's degree now. And I said, well, that's wonderful. Congratulations. Kathy says, I don't remember taking that test. And I said, well, look, get in the car. Let's go over and go back and tell my father about it. And so we walked into the house and I told him, look, here's the letter. She passed the exam with fine colors and she doesn't even remember taking it. And my father simplified it into, she doesn't need to recall that she took it. And she doesn't even need to recall what she wrote down, because Kathy had studied and she had learned all the things that she needed to learn. And then she was called upon to present it. And she did in the written exam. And she had this tremendous outpouring of knowledge. And that's why she passed the exam and passed it so well. Mm-hmm. And there's no reason for her to recall it. There's no reason for her to relive it. Is there? No, there isn't. She's got her master's degree and she's going to go on doing the rest of her life and her career, because what was accomplished was accomplished.
Yeah. So okay. she was in a highly focused state. And completely focused on that and only focused on that. And just all the answers just came to you just so simple. And you were like, blip, 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 blip. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, where am I?
Exactly. I mean, again, it's sort of like, you know, if you finish the marathon race, now you've crossed the finish line. You don't have to recall what happened 10 miles ago, do you?
No, no.
No, you've already accomplished it. You just crossed the finish line.
Yeah. And
I also used hypnosis for the birth of our three children.
Yes. He trained, my father trained or educated all of the females in the family in childbirthing so that when they delivered their child or children, what can I say? That the amount of medication that was required was limited or diminished.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have three healthy children, and other siblings have children likewise.
I so greatly appreciate our time together. I just was amazed at just boom, seeing you guys.
Thank you for listening to the Hypnosis NGH podcast. You're welcome to share your ideas for future podcasts by emailing us, nghpodcast@ngh.net.